Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Hey, I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg, and this is Side Note,
a podcast where every episode we chat about life and what's stumping us right now.
And then we research and splice in all the science and mind-blowing shiznit throughout so you are entertained while simultaneously learning.
Today, we're talking about liberals versus conservatives. Greg's going to tell a funny story about the first protest he ever went to, and then I'm going to talk about the first time I ever went to a shooting range in Canada, and then we're going to have a debate, but because Greg and I are obviously both sort of liberal, our perspective will be, is it better to call people out or call people in? And one small side note before we begin is that this episode was recorded before the midterm elections.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm okay. Sick. Something crappy happened to me on the way to the office because it's raining outside. And you know when some cars are so polite and some are not? And one truck, a truck of all things, drove by me right through a puddle and full splashed.
Full
splash.
Use that full splash.
And I wanted to throw my umbrella because, you know, like, oh, I'm so smart. I have an umbrella. I'm protecting my head. And then this jerk truck just barrels through and everyone else was taking their time because they knew it would splash the pedestrians.
What street was there a truck on?
Not like a truck, just like a pickup truck.
A pickup truck.
Yeah, not
I was like, wow, like your walk here does not involve a highway. I was picturing like an 18-wheeler.
So that's the mood I'm in.
Yeah, I just feel sick. I honestly feel sick. It's happening, it's coming, and here we go. Hashtag the winter.
Comment corner.
So before we get to our official comment of the day, I just wanted to say thank you all so much for your horror film suggestions.
Yes.
There were a ton on Instagram and Twitter. I realized I still haven't seen the new It movie.
Me
that
neither.
A bunch of people were suggesting.
And one of my
that.
Favorite directors, Xavier Dolan, says it's like so good.
Yeah.
So like it's apparently actually
good. It has good ratings.
Yeah.
I remember when it came out being like, oh, I need to see this. So that's one I want to see. And I haven't ever seen Insidious. Have you?
No.
Okay, so those
one
are
that's
two
not on here that everyone was talking about was Hereditary, too. There's a lot of good ones out now.
Okay, I'm excited for those. So what is our comment of the day, Greg?
Okay, so this comment comes from at Mellow Studies. Into that name.
Ooh,
when I
so
study,
studious.
I want to be mellow. It says, hi, I've been a fan of listening to Hashtag Side Note podcast. Oh my God, thank you. Since episode one, and would like to thank you guys for hosting such a wonderful show. Also, wanted to point out that the Thai word for sleep paralysis you mentioned should actually be pronounced P-um. And I think I had said like fium or something, and they said that H's in these words are usually silent, not science.
Wow, that's
oh my
nice.
God, I feel like my brain is just like shutting off.
Hopefully you were saying it right this time.
Yeah, but anyways, that's good to know because I don't, oh God, I get so stressed when I have to pronounce other languages.
Even sometimes when I have to like say something in another accent, you know what I mean? You're just like, do I say Melbourne or do I say like Melbourne?
Oh yeah, Melbourne.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
So what I learned this week, I don't know, I'm obsessed with this information. Okay.
Oh, that's so...
So it has to do with the 7R gene, which is a gene that we've talked about in a video before because Mitch and I actually took a compatibility test, like a physiological one, and they talk a lot about this gene. It's a gene that involves dopamine regulation, and in general, if you have the 7R gene, you're more likely to take risks, you're novelty seeking. So I think I can't remember. I think in both of us, I think I had a higher 7R gene.
I thought neither of us had it.
Oh,
we both
yeah.
were like guessing and then
yeah.
we were like, we think we both have it and then neither
I
of us
thought
did.
I
and
had
we were
it.
Both like, oh, I guess that makes sense. We're kind of chill.
Yeah, I realized like I'm actually, yeah, like I like to think I'm risky, but I'm really not. Anyway, so this gene is very predominant in the Americas. And an interesting way to think about it is because anyone who had to get to this part of the world at some point had to take a risk. Mm. So when it comes to colonization, if it was like British people, like they still were novelty seeking and risk taking in order to like go across the ocean mm-hmm. to this
like
new
their, yeah.
yeah, Canada or whatever. But also indigenous people, the people who, again, have been on this part of the world, we are in North America, a lot longer than, for example, I have and my ancestors, they would have had to come through Alaska. That's one of the main theories. So take a risk then, too. So the highest prevalence of 7R gene in the world is in a tribe of indigenous people who are the furthest south in South America. Therefore, the people who had to literally take the most...
From the north
yeah,
all
take
the
most
the
risks and go the furthest.
Wow.
So it's like really interesting because it also bleeds into our culture. Like America, Americans, North, South, in general, are individualistic. We are the types of people who, because we have higher levels of these genes, mm. it's like we kind of like actually represent that in our culture, whereas mm-hmm. people in like Eastern Asia and other places, they're not as individualistic.
Yeah,
they have literally
family oriented.
Yeah, they're less
not,
risky.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Like they're actually create societies that are less like capitalism, like me first, blah, blah, blah.
I
Anyways,
love that.
That's crazy. I know.
That's so interesting.
I think it's so interesting.
It's so crazy to think of how many weird things exist like that. That's just one gene.
Yeah.
Like
because the
many
culture of
create.
America is shaped yeah. by biology. Ugh. Anyways, yeah. so freaking cool.
Mine's not nearly as widespread, but it's still pretty interesting. So I found out that fire alarms that use the sound of a mother's voice are way more effective than tone fire alarms or
oh
just like
God.
The regular beeping. So they found maternal voices woke up 86 to 91% of kids, whereas tones only woke up 53% of kids. This was tested on kids who are like between 5 and 12. It was like hundreds of kids.
Are there fire alarms where you record, your
I
mom
guess
records?
I don't know if they just made those in this case, realizing like they should actually do that.
Oh my God, yeah. Is the mom like, fire!
Yeah, probably
fire!
Like, you have to get up. And it was like, the median time to wake up with the regular fire alarm was 156 seconds. And
what?
For the mother's voice, it was 2 seconds.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy? So how kids instantly react to like their mother's voice. It's just, I thought that was really cool.
That is so smart.
And it's like, we should change all
yeah,
fire alarms
Google
to
Home
like yelling
slash
voices.
Nest. Like, come on,
I
get
think,
on that.
I think some of those do talk. Like, I think our fire alarm goes like, fire. Alarm. But like it has to be your mother's voice, I think.
Story time.
Story time.
Story time.
Story time.
So today's topic, we are talking about the very on everyone's mind at all times these days, liberals versus conservatives. Mm-hmm. So when I think about this, I think about, you know, myself, where I fall on this spectrum, and a story that might have to do with that. And so I was raised by extremely liberal parents. I think that's like it's so obvious to me at like a very young age. I remember No Logo, a very famous like the liberal book, was like put on my bed by my parents. Like, you must read this.
Really?
Like, I was very yeah. Like,
I was just gonna say it's so interesting because I actually have no memories of politics thoughts until much later in my life.
Like your parents never.
Yeah, just weren't that.
Yeah.
If they were politically engaged, I wasn't aware.
Yeah, and they aren't even really now. I would say like compared to my
yeah,
parents
like,
now.
They, I mean, they vote, but they just don't like talk about it that much.
Yeah, but your kids do though. You like
my
you
kids
and
do?
Your siblings
yeah,
picked up
yeah,
on
yeah,
it
yeah, for sure.
But whereas I was like, it was very instilled, and so I remember this is going to be a little bit of a history lesson for people on Ontario and teaching. So. Before starting ASAP Science, I was a high school teacher. It's always been my dream to be a high school teacher. Like, I guess I'm a teacher now, but in my head, I'm like, I do wish I was in a classroom sometimes. I love children. Anyways, but So Mike Harris was a premier of Ontario who, when you say that word, it like garners like anger within me because my parents were like, Mike Harris is evil. Okay. Was a conservative premier who really tried to vilify teachers in a specific bill called Bill 160, which if you were in Ontario at the time, you would definitely remember this time. 1997, kids got 3 weeks off school because the teachers protested.
Like, okay.
Do you remember
big
that?
Strikes. Yeah. And just being like, cool, school's canceled
That's
for a bit.
So funny. When that was happening, I was like, literally politically motivated. I was like, this is so interesting. My mom and dad were like, you are baking cookies. We are bringing them to the teachers because we are showing support.
Oh my gosh.
So what he was trying to do was really pull so much funding out of the education system. There was like something leaked at the time that actually showed like he was going to give a bonus to the person in charge of education if they pulled out $667 million from education. God. And it was trying to take away
the number? $667
million was like what his... No, he wanted to take away a lot more than that, but that was just like an email they found or something. And he also really wanted to take away power from teachers. And he wanted to make it so that you didn't have to have a teaching degree to teach certain courses. And he just essentially was really showing that he thought teachers were like spoiled, like he was trying to take away the power from them. And I remember like taking time off school before we got our time off when they striked and going downtown like with signs and protesting like with my parents. Like they pulled me out of school to protest.
Just to like the government buildings or whatever? Like...
Yeah, down at Queen's Park.
Okay.
Who Sarah Polley, one of my favorite actresses, famously got like literally lost teeth in that protest.
Well, like from getting punched?
Yeah, like I was reading her Wikipedia page and it was like in this protest that she lost teeth. She must have been at the forefront.
Whoa.
I was not violent. My parents weren't like, now go fight for us. Like I remember just holding a sign, but I loved it. It actually like, I think it was such an important educational moment for me. And I got so into like activism at this young age. And I remember also at this similar time, because you know, I'm a kid and not, like you said, other kids aren't like, this is a super cool thing to be doing.
They're unaware, yeah.
They're not, or they're not like, they are thinking we get 3 weeks off of school. They don't want teachers to go back to, like, you know what I mean? They're like, and I remember I was really like motivated, like thinking about how like the Gap treated children badly to make their clothes. And like, I would refuse to go into the Gap and all these things.
Wow, good for you.
And once I like went up to this guy named Jason Peart's shirt in this time of sort of activism and my parents like teaching me this. And I like looked at him. He was cool, by the way. Like I was intimidated by him and I don't know how I had the audacity to do this, but I looked at his tag and it said like made in like Bangladesh or something. And I was like, and it was the Gap. And I was like, your shirt is from the Gap and therefore is child labor. And then he just punched me in the face.
What?
Like it was like one of these like, because he was just like, don't touch me.
Right.
Also, you're not
like,
cool. Like you can't just like, vilify me. And it was like, I just remember it was like right before everyone was going
I've
to gym
I've never been
class.
Punched in the face. I
yeah.
can't believe you have.
And it was really like striking to me because it was like, I think I was maybe doing it as a joke or just all of a sudden we were lined up. Everyone was leaving to go to, you know, they'd line kids up before they go to class. Mm-hmm. I was at the back of the line. Everyone was leaving. And I kind of just stood there as he just like walked away. And I was like, I just got like punched. Like I don't really do. And it kind of was one of those weird, when I think about being liberal and being conservative moments where it kind of hit me like, you can't just yell at people maybe or like I don't know, it was just like really stark memory because I was like, this is the right
it's
thing
stuck
to
with you
activism
yeah,
like, and I literally like just tried to put my opinion on someone and he just punched me and it was like I know I hadn't really necessarily been punched like that before and I kind of just went to gym class and like absorbed it and was just like, okay, maybe I shouldn't just like touch.
I wonder if
so
that person
weird.
Remembers
I don't think so
you.
I don't remember. Again, like
kids are also so reactive sometimes, right? He might have just been annoyed that you were touching
him. He
was
that kid, you know? He was cool. Like, he was like, not that cool people are violent when they're young, but like, he definitely, I don't think.
He was like a tough kid.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't remember because I don't think it really affected him that much. His reaction was like, I punched this kid. Hmm. It was, yeah. Anyways, it was like, when I think about that time, I'm like, it was confusing, but I was like trying to figure out where I stood.
You
definitely
are
liberal.
Just like Sarah Polley. Like you were both punched at really important moments.
That is like honestly the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me and I'm glowing.
I hope she's listening and I hope she's like, good job, Greg.
Yeah.
She inspired you.
Yeah, she did inspire me in many ways. If you're listening, Sarah, I love you.
Listening to Greg's stories as a young activist had me wanting to highlight other protests, both new and old. Let's go to Poland in October 2016. Thousands of Polish women went on strike to oppose the proposed legislation for a total ban on abortion. the woman modeled their strike on the successful strike for women's rights in Iceland in 1975. They refused to attend school, work, or participate in domestic chores. Approximately 98,000 protesters showed up to decry the new bill, and in a few days, lawmakers voted the bill down. The next protest I want to highlight is the Salt March in India, 1930. During this time, India was under British rule, and there were many laws about what citizens could and could not do. For example, Britain's Salt Act of 1882 prohibited Indians from collecting or selling salt, a staple in their diet. So citizens were forced to buy from the British, and there was also a heavy tax on the salt, making it very unaffordable. So Gandhi, you know Gandhi, figured that by defying the Salt Act, it would be a simple way for Indians to break British law non-violently. In 1930, he led a march of 240 miles to the coastal town on the Arabian Sea. By the time he reached the sea, 10,000 people had joined him in a march to make salt. Civil disobedience broke out all across India, soon involving millions of Indians, and British authorities arrested more than 60,000 people, Gandhi included. Many considered the Salt March in 1930 as a catalyst that caused a large number of Indians to join in the fight for sovereignty. India won its independence in August 1947. Next, let's look at Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter began in 2013 in protest of police gun violence of unarmed black suspects. Protests grew in 2014 after the shooting of 18-year-old Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Though police shootings continue to happen and arrests of officers remain rare, Black Lives Matter has sparked a national conversation about racial bias and the use of excessive force by the police. But what makes a movement a success? And when has enough time passed to assess whether something has had an influence? For example, in 1971, the U.S. made a historic visit to China. And in a conversation between U.S. official Henry Kissinger and Chinese party leader Zhu Enlai, Kissinger asked what he thought about the French Revolution. Enlai famously replied, "It is too early to say." The French Revolution was nearly 200 years prior to their meeting. Some argue that this response may have been a mistranslation. But what Enlai may have been suggesting is we have to take the long view. How we measure things might not fall into discrete boxes of success and failure.
Your story actually made me think of the only time I've actually been political when I was little, and this is so embarrassing, but when people started saying that like Santa Claus wasn't real, I remember being so upset and starting a group that was all about people who like believed in Santa and like fighting for it around the playground. That's not my story.
Wait, what? You made a group to be like Santa
Claus?
Yeah,
I was like, if you don't believe in Santa, then you're not allowed to play with us, and this is the people who all believe in Santa.
Oh my God.
Anyway, that's not my story. My story is a little bit more like somber and intense. So if you don't know this about Canada, Alberta is a little bit like the conservative part of Canada, right? Like in some ways people call it like the America of Canada. Not that everyone there
is
conservative.
I feel like that's like, yeah, I feel like and when you say that, I'm like, no, it's not right to say that, but it's true. That's
people,
what people
say that. People say that. And that's been my impression of it growing
There's
up. It's
oil.
Often voted very conservative compared to like many other provinces. So I don't think it's
the
that
tar
controversial.
Sands. It's like this very like huge oil business there from the tar sands, which are horrible for the environment.
Right.
Anyways.
So I, a few years ago, had never been to Calgary, and Calgary is a big city, so it's also like progressive, and I think they have like
a really
progressive mayor. But I went there and was like meeting up with some friends for the first time, and was kind of nervous because I was like going to be in Alberta, like this like also like a very like cowboy country kind of like place, right? It was during Calgary Stampede, so it's when there's like lots of people like that. But when I was there, everyone I was with wanted to go to a shooting range. And I've never been to a shooting range, and I've always told myself, like, I don't really want to. Like, I'm kind of afraid of guns in the first place. Like, I don't really believe in the idea of gun ownership. Like, obviously, as a Canadian from Ontario, like, people, I'm sure there are people who own guns, but it's just not in my vicinity at all.
Gun culture is very minimal.
And it's invisible to me. Yeah. I'm sure there are plenty of people in the country who like maybe hunt for sport or things like that, but it's just like I've literally never seen a gun.
In general, it's like sort of like that's not like that's weird, but you're like, wow, there's a gun in the room. Wow.
Oh, like, yeah. Like if I see a gun. So we go to this place. I'm like, okay, I'll go. Like I'm with all these people. I don't want to be like the party.
Wait, what do you mean this place? A shooting
range, right? So I've never been to one. So you walk in and it's literally just like a giant room at first of like guns everywhere with like bullets all over the place, and these people are more than happy to like tell you about them, and we are told like, okay, you guys want to go to the shooting range, you're gonna have to go to this back room and like do this tutorial and stuff and be shown how to like hold the gun properly and all this.
What kind of guns?
So I don't know if you can choose for the shooting range. As far as I remember, like what we would be shooting was just like a pistol, but the
but
like in the place there's like giant rifles, there's like, I don't know if there's like sniper rifles, but there's people shooting and it's so loud. Like I never occurred to me how loud a gun can actually be, because I've never been beside one getting shot.
Oh my god. Yes.
And yeah, it's like literally like hearing like bang so loud, thinking like I feel like I'm in a war zone, so like I'm already set off and like my brain's running in
so
a way
to
that
pay, you have to pay obviously for
yeah
this.
You pay. I don't remember if I paid, to
I'm
be honest,
curious,
I don't know
much.
If maybe somebody had coordinated it for us of that group. So I honestly forget. Oh yeah, to be honest, okay, another part of this is that it was with a bunch of like people from Big Brother. I actually think we were going for free.
We get it, you were on Big Brother,
okay, but
Mitch.
I think
oh
it was like
God,
I think they were like,
episode.
Oh, if you guys like tweet it or show it on your Instagram, then you can go for
that's
free.
The thing. Big Brother people like are good at that. You're not as good at
yeah.
that. They'll be like, if they're
and
at
I
a
was
restaurant.
Also like, I'm not Instagramming a gun place
oh my God.
So that I can go here for free. Like
oh my God, yeah.
So we go like I was like, I'll pay. But we go and do the tutorial and they're like showing us how to use the gun, and I'm already terrified because there's like pistols in the room, or like the man's holding a pistol and showing us whatever. But then once we went into the area, you get like filtered into an area where you actually shoot. Like he was demonstrating how to shoot it, and just from that moment I was actually like, I can't do this. Like I feel sick to my stomach. I honestly feel like every imagery of what a gun can do like rushed into my head.
That liberal snowflake stereotype.
Honestly, yeah,
because
everyone
out.
Else was like, oh my God, feel the power. And I actually, I had to leave.
You called me.
I left.
I remember not knowing what to say because you were like, literally, like,
I was
crying.
Yeah, yeah, I was like having a breakdown because I left the whole building, walked down the street. There was like nothing really around.
And you were like, these people are sick.
Because it was such a visceral reaction for me that I was like, when, I don't know if you've ever felt this, Greg, but like, or if you've ever heard a gun go off beside you, and not just a pistol, but then there's also like these intense, intense guns that you're like, why does anyone want to shoot this? Like,
yeah,
gun
no, I've honestly can't say that I've never. Yeah.
And it's really scary. And I know that's like maybe a wimpy thing, because I'm also just not like, I've never
no,
been
no, it's not
one.
A wimpy thing.
But
that's
yeah,
like
I never felt like I thought I was going to throw up. I thought I was like, I was just picturing people like who would ugh. Be literally traumatized being here, who have been in war zones, who like don't have the privilege to just be beside a gun for fun.
Honestly, our Alabama listeners are laughing at us for
yeah,
sure
no, it's
right
true.
Now. Like it's like so interesting to me because it's like I know that Americans.
It's just
probably,
such a different upbringing, and you're so used to it. I think.
Like I know you're talking about Canadians, but it's like, and yeah, obviously you can go to a shooting range and still feel like I don't know power or whatever, like shooting a gun. But really, when I think about America and their gun issues, it is important for anyone American listening to know that we think it's crazy that you like have attached yourself to this as if it's like culture. It's just so weird because mm-hmm. I know Americans like it differs from state to state.
Yeah.
But the fact that it can be a part of your culture is so weird. There's obviously people like in Canada who do that, but like
right.
I've never seen
as
a gun
more mass cultural. Yeah. People yeah, like, who are even not. Gun fans in America still understand, I think, more than us, like the culture of just like accepting.
And there may be more if
so
you are super into guns or hunting, you're maybe a little bit like shyer about it in Canada because you know it actually comes with negative connotations in general.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like in other places,
and I think in Canada it's less like the right to bear arms and more like I have a hobby that is hunting.
Yeah,
right. Like I don't think that many. People
and even
carry
then, don't
guns.
You feel like people who have a hobby in hunting like they then try and like justify it?
Yeah, and they're also like, I'm not carrying this to protect myself.
Yeah, they're like, I want to shoot a quail.
Yeah,
but also remember when we went to Las Vegas and there's so many ads like for shooting ranges where you literally like shoot like targets that are people
mm-hmm.
and it's so weird and they have ads
they'll
like,
be like Osama bin Laden's
yeah
face.
And
yeah.
I remember like seeing bus ads like walking down the Vegas strip and seeing a bus ad like advertising a shooting range and literally having like kind of a feeling like what you were just mentioning where I'm like, I need to get on a plane and get the hell
yeah.
out of this
like
desert.
I don't want
to
support
like
this.
Why am I in the middle of desert where there's no water with all these freaking hotels like this place is like disgusting. But those visceral reactions would come a lot of the time when I'd see ads for like shooting ranges, but with like semi-automatic weapons. Oh, good lord.
Anyway,
above.
All to say that I find guns like actually terrifying, and I wasn't able to overcome it. It actually like scared me too much.
When it comes to liberals and conservatives, few subjects can be as polarizing as firearms, and specifically gun control. In a country like the United States, where according to the Gun Violence Archive, mass shootings are experienced almost on a daily basis, pushing for stricter access to firearms seems like an obvious strategy. But what are the reasons why guns become so prevalent in a society to begin with? A big factor in guns becoming, you know, part of our whole country and nation is obviously culture. If you grow up immersed in a culture where gun ownership is the norm or even praised, this is of course going to influence your personal attitudes towards guns. Countries with high levels of gun ownership, like the United States, are Switzerland, which I found really surprising, Serbia, and Yemen. These places have deeply established gun cultures. So much like the latest iPhone, or like the newest Lady Gaga song that dropped, or like a pair of Jordans or a Rolex, right? Like, firearms become for some people as like a status symbol or like something in culture that you talk about. Within gun cultures, having more or better guns affords one like a higher status. I've never really thought about it this way, but it's like guns for some people is like fashion for others. Furthermore, in most gun cultures, firearms are also seen as a symbol of power, which regrettably often plays into notions of masculinity. So, though gun culture in Yemen, for example, revolves in part around the ritual of celebratory fire, owning a gun or a firearm is also seen as a symbol of like manhood and leadership. And in the United States, over 60% of gun owners are male. Men are more likely to tie their identities to their guns, whether it's via hunting, watching gun-related television, or, as Mitch experienced, going to shooting ranges. And this is something that, just living in our society, is sort of easy to see. When we think of guns, we do think of men, and we do think of masculinity. When it comes to seeing guns as a source of protection, which is another reason why culturally guns become popular, an integral factor is how deeply the populace trusts the state. If people are less likely to believe that their government is willing and capable of protecting them, then they're more likely to turn to their own gun ownership to achieve a sense of safety. In Serbia, the Public Policy Research Center found that 70% of Serbs felt safe in their homeland, but not because they believed that their country's security, their government, their institutions were sound, but they collectively had more faith in themselves and their neighbors, and interestingly,
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Serbia is a place with a very strong gun culture. And we can see this dynamic in the United States, right? We hear about this all the time. We read about it. Conservatives distrust their governmental institutions, and they are more likely to be more fear-based in the way that they have an outlook of their lives. Therefore, this fear and this distrust in the government means gun ownership is more prevalent among those with right-wing views. And as fears and resentments against racial outgroups, immigrants, and all these issues continue to swell, people will feel that they have more need to protect themselves against these, in many cases, not realistic fears of the outside world. When we look at liberals, 26% of them are against allowing concealed and carry laws. That's like these laws in the states that allow you to like have guns on you. Whereas over 70% of conservatives would be on board. They want conceal and carry. They want people to be able to have their guns. And so having the culture of guns be a thing is a liberal versus conservative issue. And there are many factors, including culture, masculinity, fear of the government that all play into whether or not a country is interested in having guns. So after the break, we are going to have a debate about when it comes to this liberal and conservative sort of side of things. Is it better to call people out or to call people in? We'll explain it more after the break, but that's going to be the context of how we argue today.
All right, so it's time for us to debate, but this debate's a little more nuanced because obviously both Greg and I are liberal people.
But we still have, argue a lot.
We do argue a lot, but the way we've decided to sort of pose this so it can apply to, I think, anyone's sensibility in terms of like changing people's opinions about politics is whether or not it's better to call people out or call them in. And by calling in, we mean like, well, we'll kind of talk a little bit more about it, but not just like yelling at them for being wrong, but finding a way to teach them a little more, be a little bit more sensitive and slow with it, I think, is the way we positioned it, right?
Yeah, and we talk about this a lot. Like, I actually think we do.
Yeah, and so that it doesn't sound like we obviously have a mesh of opinions here. We're going to stand for each side, and then we'll open up this debate. But I'm going to be debating for calling in, and Greg is going to be debating for calling out.
Okay, and you're going to go first this week?
Sure.
Debate time.
Okay, well, I first like to start by asking you, Greg, you don't have to answer right now, but when's the last time you changed somebody's opinion by calling them out? I feel like it's really, really rare because when people get called out, they get really defensive and they're not in the mindset, I think, to change their opinion. I want to start and clarify, I'm never in this argument defending anyone in the world who's like super obnoxious, or I'm not defending Nazis. I'm not defending people who are homophobic or transphobic. I'm talking more about people who are sensible people and aren't pure evil, okay? So, science shows that you can't change people's opinions with facts. You can't just yell at them. You can't just tell them what they did wrong. You have to appeal to their emotions and figure out what they want. And so, vaccines is a really good example. If you can find a way to connect with someone and say like, hey, you're afraid of vaccines because you care about your kids. I also care about kids and my kids. Here's like a place we can relate. That's a nice way of calling somebody in instead of saying you're dumb because vaccines save lives. Calling out often comes from a place of ego and reaction, whereas calling in is more of a place of service. Like think of someone like President Barack Obama, or we're going to call him president forever. He was all about, you know, steering the ship one bit at a time. You have to understand that everyone comes from a different place, and it's really hard, I think,
1 minute,
to expect people to go from, you know, a mentality of 1950s to 2018 in seconds. Of course, all this only really matters if both people are willing to cooperate in good faith. But I honestly think that calling in requires a lot more compassion and patience. I think at the end of the day, like calling out is a good way to rally your own support. But if you want to change people's opinions, I think you have to call them in. Otherwise, what Donald Trump is doing is calling people out, and all it's doing is serving is riling up his own base, as opposed to ever reaching over to like the more liberal side of the agenda or whatever and calling them in to say, here's how we can work together. There's two
15 seconds.
Oh God. No. Okay. A 2016 study showed that door-to-door canvassing leading to 10-minute conversations could substantially reduce transphobia. It was effective regardless of the person or of the canvasser themselves was cis or trans. And, there's been a lot of techniques developed around this. So that's all. I'll end my debate. That calling in is better. That was really disjointed at the end. I'm sorry.
No, that was good though. Honestly,
I have more points that we can.
I was like, you spooked me a little bit.
I was just debating in my head whether I should have more of a conversation about some of my points I wanted to bring up. So I'll end there. I'll let you get prepared for your call.
Yeah. No, actually,
debate.
No. That was. I'm spooked.
All right, so Greg,
don't even know. I'm sick. I'm feeling sick.
So Greg, you think that people, or your debate is that we should be calling people out. Are you ready to go?
Yes. Okay. So I think silence on any sort of subject is always going to give a lot more power to the oppressor. And I think I'm going to start with like a personal anecdote. And calling out is so important because the people who are being victimized in these situations are the ones who have to feel the pain and the burden and the uncomfort. When you get, for example, personally, someone says something homophobic to me, it really can scare me. Like recently we were on the bus and that guy, remember, he randomly was like, stay mm-hmm. away from me, I'm not gay. And we immediately fell silent. Mm-hmm. I would have loved if someone could have stood up for me, because in those moments when you're being attacked, you're the one who has to take on all the discomfort. And if you don't say anything and allow the other people to feel uncomfortable, it's literally not fair and things aren't going to change. It happened again with me the other day when I was at a comedy open mic. And people made fun of me in like this weird way and like kind of attacked me for being feminine. And I was silent. And it's because in those moments when you're being attacked, it's so hard to come up with what to say because you're feeling all of those feelings that if no one is there to call those people out, sometimes you can't do it for yourself. And also, when it comes to someone like Donald Trump, we don't know him. We can't call him in. He needs to be called out publicly because a lot of the times the people in power aren't actually people you can have a literally have a conversation with.
Oh, whoops. You only have 40 seconds left.
What? Oh, my God. And it works. Think about Roseanne Barr, Megyn Kelly. These people have been taken away from their positions of power because of the way that they acted that was racist. And I don't think people need to be allowed to be in those positions of power if they act in those specific ways. And I think it's also found that it can, studies show, increase confidence. When women confront sexism themselves, they actually feel more comfortable, more confident.
20 seconds.
And comfortable, being comfortable is the thing that I think is the most important. People who are doing the oppressing need to feel uncomfortable because they are making other people feel uncomfortable. And Barack Obama, our president forever, also is someone who, you're right, I think the only thing I look back on and I'm like, maybe he needed to call people out more because, again, he was taken advantage of, if you think of like the Supreme Court.
Done. Okay. Woo! Okay. There's still a lot to obviously talk. I think we both are just like, there's so many things to talk about. I want to address one of your points. And it's not that I don't actually disagree with it. So I think like this conversation is so nuanced, and
but
we should
have you changed? Because there was a time in our lives where we would argue about this a lot because I would really call people out, and you would be like, "Greg, it's the wrong thing."
Because
to do.
I think it's contextual. So that's what I want to say. Like I obviously believe in calling people in, but I think some of the examples you gave are really good examples of when it's appropriate to call people out, and that's why it's like this debate is kind of a front for like, I believe we should have nuanced conversations about things, and it's not one or the other. Like that bus situation, you're exactly right. When someone's literally in a moment of oppression, other people should call those people out. And I think calling out is especially effective when the person is in a position of mass power and can set an example for many other people.
So what is, like, that's why I'm confused.
I think the problem is that we definitely do live in a call-out culture, right? Like, it's really fun to get the pitchforks online, especially, and, like, see these people who do stupid things and then make them blow up as viral videos and shame them. And in some ways, I think that's important. When we see awful things, we should show the public, like, this is not right.
And the public's only going to care about people who are in power. They're not going to care about
That's not true. There's always random people all over the internet who are in grocery stores, like, accosting people. And I'm not even saying those shouldn't be shared. What I'm kind of thinking about is like oftentimes nowadays people get really called out for stuff that might have even happened like 10 years ago. And I'm still for holding people responsible and accountable and having them have to own up for doing and saying stupid things. But I also think back on myself and how much more educated I've become over the last 10 years. Like that's a lot of time. My parents have changed so much. Like when I came out as gay, my parents had a fully different set of beliefs than they do now, I think, about who gay people are, what they deserve, what everyone should
believe. But because they were called out by your existence, by you having to go up and talk to them and
right,
be like, I have a boyfriend.
Should they be called out today is what I'm at saying. Because some people are getting called out today for things that they actually don't stand for anymore.
I do. Okay, so this is what I would say. I actually think they should. I think it's important for, if we use your parents as an example, for them to acknowledge that they maybe were homophobic and had homophobic thoughts before they had a gay son. I think if we don't all learn to accept that we exist in a culture where we've been raised to be homophobic and racist and view white people as superior, then there's no way that we can move forward. And that's why I think calling, what frustrates me about trying to be too sensitive about these things is that it's true. Like, when you call people out right now, I really think people are being called out for very truthful things. And if we can't acknowledge that we were the way that we were, and if someone calls me out for something I did in the past, then I need to be like, yeah, you're right. That was a racist thing that I said because at that time I was racist because I was raised to feel that way, as was everyone else. And if we do not acknowledge that, then we can't move forward because we can't keep making excuses for people when it's actually the system that exists. And I think the best way to actually start to come to terms with this and not be so defensive is to accept that, yeah, like we all live within these structures that inform the way that we view the world. And we all, I am homophobic. I am, because of the way that I've been raised. Internalized homophobia is a huge part of being gay. And if you can't talk about that and admit and be vulnerable around those things, then you're just going to continue to be ignorant and continue to perpetuate it.
But isn't there a lot, like that's kind of also like, I guess there's a fine, there's maybe not even a fine line. It's a blurred line between what is calling out versus
blurred
what
line.
Is calling
wow, that's
out.
A really interesting song to have brought up right now.
Okay,
because quite frankly, call that
okay,
out.
Okay, okay, okay. No, I just mean like. Because to me, like, if you're able to talk rationally and reasonably with someone and say the things that you're saying right now, that's almost a call-in for me. Like, let's actually have a real conversation around addressing these things as opposed and saying, like, look, can we all kind of come to an agreement that we live in a society that promotes and perpetuates all these thoughts?
But
and
they're not,
you're a part
they're not
going
to listen to that. They're going to, I'm
they
saying,
might,
what if
versus
they react?
You just saying, you're homophobic. And you're an asshole, and there's nothing that can be done about that,
okay,
right? Like,
you're right. I think
calling
that...
in is the part that comes after the call out. Like, you call someone out for their mistake, but then you try to call them in to literally teach them, like, what would be more appropriate. And I just wanted to bring up one example of a man named Daryl Davis, who is a black man who has sat with hundreds of KKK members, Ku Klux Klan members, and converted them to leave the Ku Klux Klan. He has 200 robes that they give him every time he's able to, like, kind of convert someone that he's collected. And he says it's just he wasn't trying to convert them. He just wanted to sit down with people and understand their perspective and have them see him as a human.
See, oh, God, that may, I'm like, that is so exhausting to me to think.
Right. Why is that his job, right?
Think like, about that, like, think about that, like, obviously he must be the most patient, the most empathetic, the amount of energy and work that he has had to do to even sit in front of someone who's from the KKK. I'm like, how can that be, how, like, how have we gotten this far that has to be an option? I agree. I think that what he does is amazing, and those people maybe need to be called in, but I don't know, I think maybe calling people out on a larger scale will hopefully, like, minimize that, like, even existence of the KKK.
Well, has it worked? Like, the KKK still exists, you know? I guess it exists regardless of both methods.
I think
but...
we live in such a tumultuous time. You're so right. And I think that, like, yeah, we can acutely be aware of this as a time when people are being called out. But I actually think, going back to Barack Obama and the famous quote that you brought up, that I know I brought to you from the New Yorker article that I was obsessed with reading, he was like, I need to try and steer a ship. If you steer a ship 90 degrees, even 45 degrees, it tips. You need to always be thinking of a ship as something that needs to be slowly turned left or turned right or whatever. And I think we are only here for 80 years and we're in an acute part of history where all of this calling out and all of this damage and even this tension is going to result in us progressing forward. Even though it might be at the sacrifice of right now, there being a lot of tension. I know within our friends, I always have been the person who calls people out. I went to a teacher's college that taught me about how to do this properly and to kind of, like, literally no holds bar call people out. I've been doing it to you and with my friends.
But I think, and it can work, but sometimes it does push people away.
But don't you think
away.
Over time it's worked better than me not calling people out?
Well, it's just hard to parse that apart. I do think it's worked. Like, I've definitely seen over time our friend groups have progressed, but I also think that's part and parcel of, like, society progressing as well, right? So you having a great influence on your friends is one major factor in also the fact that they're going to see all of society kind of going like, oh yes, like, we should support these issues that maybe 5 years ago we didn't even think about.
But they were like, my point is that, like, when I
I've just seen the visceral reaction in the moment from you sometimes, like, you know, calling people out, like, who are friends.
Because they've said something that if there was someone in the room who wasn't our group of friends, which is, like, you know, a homogenous group within the queer community, that there's no one there to defend
but
what they
said. But you would
educate
them. You're not just calling them out. You're an asshole. You're not just saying you're homophobic. You're not just saying you're racist.
No,
usually,
I don't think you should say that.
But that's, I think,
what
calling
you said
out
was
is,
racist.
Right?
Sorry, what you said was homophobic.
But you often will explain it, and I think, to me, that's calling in when you try to break down for someone, like, because, like, there's many things that I'm ignorant of, too, right? Like, there's plenty of issues in this world that I get to walk through life and don't have to think about, and sometimes,
but if you were called out,
but
you would,
I would
listen.
I would, but I would listen more if someone called me out followed by a call in. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was shitty what you just did, and, like, here's why.
So I do think,
maybe coming from a position of privilege, you're kind of blind to things sometimes.
Okay, you're right. I think what I'm trying to say is that this is interesting, and I think what's happening is our conversation is meshing
kind of, like, blending,
and, like,
yeah,
creating a, like, point, which I think is that I think you should never allow something that you feel to be oppressive go unnoticed. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that people need to know, that when you hear someone say something, whether it's a joke, whether it's something that you think is inappropriate, and you have that kind of feeling in your stomach, you need to say something. And if you don't, that's a missed opportunity and you are in the wrong. That's what I would say. And how you say that, I agree, should be mixed with the call-in. So you need to plan ahead. You need to make sure, as white men, it's... Well, I guess you're not fully white. We did 23andMe. Sorry. As someone who's 99.9% Northwestern European, that's myself, very white, it is up to me to educate myself, to spend more time than other people, to learn so that I can call people out effectively. And you're right. In order to, you need to know a lot so you don't just say, I think it's not a smart thing to say that person is racist. It's really smart to say what you just said is racist and here is why. And if that is calling in per se, then I think, yes, you need to call people out with calling in tactics.
Right.
And I think my point is that I want people listening to know that if they ever feel like someone has said something that has irked them or that they think they should have called them out and they didn't, it's you were wrong and you should have called them out if you want to be a positive aspect of member of society. And it hurts and it's awkward. And I know this with my friends. There was a tumultuous time where I was feeling like people around me were not, I was scared. I was like, if you continue to act like this, I can't be your friend. And I was maybe being quite forceful, but I'm looking back and I'm realizing like a strong remembrance for me is sometimes you would argue with me about things. And then if I got, say, example, like we go to your house and something's brought up, I would hear you sort of mimicking what I'd said to you. And it's almost like I think of calling out as like marinating. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it's just like you get a visceral reaction, you get defensive.
I think that's true. I think there's something to
bleeds in.
I don't have this fact verified. I've just heard Bill Nye say it. So like we maybe can look into this, but it was something like it takes people a year or two to really come around to a new idea. So if you have never thought about like queer rights before and suddenly you feel like they're being shoved down your throat, it might take you a few years to actually finally sort of like let that marinate and then go, okay, I was able to slowly tear down my walls of like the guard that I had up of just like fighting people when they told me I was wrong, to finally seeing like, oh, this is just reality. Like gay people and queer people exist. And now I can start to see it from a different perspective.
And I think it's all so intertwined and it's so funny.
I just say, I just think like a big part that's sort of being missed is like the compassionate part. There are people who are super bad people and there's really ignorant people, but like,
and they're doing the damage.
I know, but we have been ignorant people in many ways. I think everyone has. And I think that's just like an important step sometimes to take. And I'm not trying to defend people and I don't want this to come off the wrong way because there are lots of people who are just shitty. But there are plenty of people who are good people and want to know how to be better people in a world that's changing really fast.
And that is when I think it's so important that we embrace vulnerability and embrace mistakes. And I think a lot of this is rooted in this like visceral reaction to being like, it's almost like I wish people could accept being called out better. You know what I mean? Like,
you're right.
It's frustrating to me because I'm like, if someone tells me I'm doing something wrong, my instinct now is like, oh my God,
you've trained yourself how to go, you don't get angry. Like they're saying it for a reason.
I know. And I guess I just, sometimes it frustrates me because I'm like, are we really going to sacrifice, in my opinion, people dying? People, like, if you look at America right now, the people who are being oppressed, it's so obviously wrong that are we going to sacrifice that just because some people are literally, like, unable to handle it? And again, it goes back, like, I could start.
But sometimes it's not, like, some issues, like, you could get in a debate about, like, pro-choice versus pro-life. Like, where does this fall there? You know, like, sometimes there's things that just seem so obvious, but then other arguments are a little more nuanced and then no one thinks the other side is right. You know, like there are arguments where it's like, yeah, no one could convince me it's okay to be transphobic. No one can convince me it's okay to be racist. But there are some debate points that maybe I'd go like, okay, I see that there's different perspectives on this and there's no one answer. And people are fighting for different things in this argument, right? Like, I don't know. It's hard. Like, I don't know.
It's so hard.
What we're saying applies to some situations and not others. And that's when I think it's like,
I think that
allowing to remind people to see each other as people, because we're living in such a time where it's so easy to be like, I hate conservative people. That's like what I'm being reinforced day in and day out. And I think conservative people are being reinforced, like liberals are ruining this world. And I think that's only getting worse. And we have to just kind of stop and remember like, yeah, there's bad people, but like a big average amount of us are like just trying to figure out what life is.
And I think that's where I'm getting to my point, which is that big average amount. I think it's that is where people need to be called out in order to move things forward. And I think when we look at the world right now, the people who are suffering, literally, physically, if you think about violence, the people who are actually having to suffer are the ones who are, we need to be calling people out to defend for. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm like, I don't actually care about a conservative person maybe getting so mad about me calling them out and not being able to handle it right now because they're not the people who are actually
like suffering.
Suffering.
Yeah. No,
and I just think when I look and I zoom out, and even when I talk to people who are really conservative in the times that I've had to do it, I always find that's an important thing. Who is dying?
You're right. And that's something I think we both should. It's like, why don't you care about other people? Right,
well,
like stop.
I don't think that.
Sometimes that's the issue. Like even when it comes to like public services, right? Like libraries. But you say like, why do you want to stop all these things that are helping
like
people
taxing,
who need help?
Like literally, like being like a fiscally conservative person. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like tax goes to people who aren't as yes. But I also even mean just like statistically in general, like even just as simply as who is dying. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like so, mm-hmm. Sometimes those types of things. It's like that's why we need to call people out because in the end, we're defending the people who. As I said earlier, to try and bring it back to an anecdote about me, anytime I've had homophobic slurs or had anything happen to me, I've actually physically been silent because it overcomes you in a way that I can't describe. And maybe mm-hmm. some people can't relate to that. I'm sure everyone can. Even if you're a straight white guy, you've probably been bullied mm-hmm. and gone, and that's the feeling that everyone gets, that if you don't, as a person in power, as a person who's calm in those moments, mm-hmm. don't say anything, then I think you are a huge part of the problem.
Yeah, I think we agree in general. Like, mm-hmm. I definitely agree. Calling out is an important thing and just like checking it every now and then. Are we calling out because we want to be right or are we calling out because we actually want the world to be better?
Yeah, okay, this is a good conversation. I feel like we could do this one every single time.
Yeah,
and I think,
honestly,
just for people out there, literally, okay, use the hashtag Side Note Podcast. Tell us what you think mm-hmm. because I think there's so much that conversation around this that we can have. You're like calling out, like call out culture is a word mm-hmm. that people use now. And it's really interesting because I think a lot of people are probably screaming right now at me thinking, how could you ever say call out culture?
But likewise, I think the other side could be screaming at me and saying like, yeah, but stop defending people who are shitty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why I keep going like, I'm not defending them, but I am in some ways.
This is
right?
fascinating because there's not an answer. And I am so excited to be dead in the ground and I don't believe in an afterlife, but I'm curious I'm just like, what is it going to be like in 200 years? Like, what is going to be the result of this?
Of all of this time,
this turmoil, this feeling that we're feeling right now, like mm-hmm. I genuinely think I'm a cynical person, but with idealistic ideas. And I think it will actually be a good thing in the end.
That's the only way I get through the day, girl.
We're just going to end up banging robots. That's the whole... Robots are going to take over. That's the other thing. We're not going to matter because literally robots are going to control.
Yeah, they're going to be like, oh, yeah. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah, the microchip in our head is going to be like, oh, you're a liberal and you're just going to die.
And I know you better than you know yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, tell us what you think. Calling out or calling in or some variation of those things. What do you like doing? What do you think's the right thing for the future and for getting
Please keep
class?
This conversation going online. Like, I just want to type with people now. And, like, I'm so curious.
Yeah, like, we will for sure read some of these comments, I think, because this is, like, a really controversial but also
Next
educational
week,
topic.
Mean. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We'll read some of your comments on the podcast so we can give more perspective than just our own two, who are just two guys who are gay, who are mostly white. I mean, I'm not all white, as Greg
64% over
no,
the
60, honey.
60.
So yeah, no, it'd be nice to hear some other perspectives. And we appreciate you guys listening. Thanks for listening. Hashtag Side Note Podcast, or you can follow us at Mitchell Moffitt, at Whale Watch Me PLZ. At Whale Watch Me PLZ. Just pick a new handle.
I need
handle.
To change my handle, but I can because I love it.
I think this was a longer episode than normal, so thank you if you stuck around.
I'm literally sweating. Okay.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
Bing.
Bye.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.